second.
I'm pretty sure I went first, but I'm not sure.
I don't remember that, but sure, yes. Part two of the Essential Albums. You can't say part two of volume three. That's confusing.
This isn't a homework assignment.
No, no. Volume this two, is part three. Welcome back, because I guess we're back to the show that talks about stuff on purpose. It's Trapo season three, motherfuckers.
We back.
I'm Dustin.
I'm Kai.
Today, it's part two of the season three premiere, Essential Albums volume three. That's what this is. It's part two. It's volume three, part two. I just did the thing I told myself I wasn't going to do because it's confusing, but I did it anyway. Another example of us not learning our lessons.
We don't do that well.
That's one thing that's been made abundantly clear. We're going to keep the train rolling. We're going to go a little further in time. When was Harvest released, by the way?
72.
Oh, well, you know what we're going to do? I think we're going to jump ahead about 40 fucking years. Or 30. We're going to jump ahead 30 years. I'm not going to go that far ahead. I'm not crazy. To the year 2002. To a time I was a young man. A young idealistic man with stars in my eyes and dreams. I don't know what the fuck I had in my head at the time. I don't 2002? Who the fuck knows what I was thinking? I wasn't thinking much. So I was probably high as a kite, if I'm being honest. 9/11 had just happened. Everything sucked. Thought we were all going to die. And I was high. 2002, well, you know, it was the perfect time to listen to a little Tom Waits.
Finally.
I pulled the trigger. I did it. And I agonized over this because I was wondering what Tom Waits album was the one that I know I want to throw out and put in the can right now. I don't know. I was thinking maybe I should have picked Frank's Wild Years because that's the one that made me a Tom Waits fan. That's how I got into Tom Waits. But against my better judgment, I had to pick his 2002 release, Blood Money. I had to do it.
If there's one thing you can say about mankind, there's nothing kind about man. You can drive out nature with a pitchfork, but it always comes roaring back again. Misery's the river of the world. Misery's the river of the world. Misery's the river of the world.
Turns out Blood Money's my favorite Tom Waits album. I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know it until last week. I could have put any Tom Waits album in here. It's all the same. Not to say that all Tom Waits music is the same. He's got a varied catalog. But I could have put any Tom Waits album in here and it probably would have meant about the same to me. Because it's great. I love his music. He's an amazing, talented artist. I love what he does. He hasn't made an album in a while. He may not make another album. Maybe done. And if so, that's fine. He's had his career. Blood Money, for whatever reason, I just tend to revisit the most. I still can't put my finger on it. It's his 15th studio album, by the way. Co-written by Kathleen Brennan, his wife, his partner. This particular album, it's not unique in Tom Waits' catalog. He's done this before. It is based on music he wrote for a play. He's done this on two other occasions. He did this with The Black Writer and with Alice. Robert Wilson, he's collaborated with Tom Waits on The Black Writer and Alice. And in fact, Alice was the sister album to Blood Money. They came out at the same time. Black Writer and Alice are actually the names of the plays. Blood Money is music that was based on a play called Wojcik. And Wojcik is a play that was originally written by a man named George Buchner. He didn't finish his play. He died before he could finish it, 1837. But Wojcik is the story of, it's loosely based on a true story of Johann Christian Wojcik, who was a wig maker who became a soldier. He had a mistress, she was a widow, and they were together for a while, but he had mental problems, got jealous, and he murdered her. He was later publicly beheaded. That the happens. Play Wojcik, oh, it happens, Kai. It happens all the time, more often than you'd like to admit. The play, very loosely based on the real story, and it was never finished. A man named Carl Emil Franzos found the fragment of the play, finished it, and it was eventually, its first production was in 1913. The fragment that Buchner wrote ends with Wojcik cleaning the knife he used to murder the widow in a river. I find it very funny. That's how the play basically ends, because that's all that that Buchner wrote. At this point, Franzos wrote a very simple stage direction, quite literally just, he drowns. That's how he ended the play. Somehow, Wojcik just drowns in the river when he's cleaning the blade. Because of this, and because of the fact that the play was unfinished in its original form, it's a very famous play. There have been a lot of productions. There have been film adaptations. A lot of these adaptations take a lot of liberty with the play. Franzos just made that ending up. So we can make our own ending up. that it's just as valid. The reason why I know Wojcik is because I know Werner Herzog directed his own adaptation of Wojcik. He started filming this 5 days after he finished filming his own adaptation of Nosferatu. 5 days later, the same crew who were fucking exhausted, and the same star, Klaus Kinski, also fucking exhausted. His adaptation is hypnotic and weird and beautiful, but that has nothing to do with the subject at hand, really, because if you listen to the music of Blood Money, you don't get Wojcik. You don't get any of that. The ship is sinking. The ship is sinking. Full of nihilism and bitterness and cruelty. Misery is the river of the world.
Everybody moan. Everybody moan. Misery is the river of the world.
God's away on business.
God's away on business. Business.
Starving in the belly of the whale.
Oh, you're starving in the belly. Starving in the belly. Starving in the belly of a whale.
The instrumental majesty that is Knife Chase. One of the best things that's ever been made by anybody in the history of the world. But all of that is balanced with such a tremendous tenderness and vulnerability. All the world is green.
Maybe when our story's over, we'll go where it's always spring. The band is playing our song again. All the world is green.
Lullaby is one of the most disarming songs I've heard in my life.
If I'd be for you, don't you cry, don't you weep. Nothing's ever yours to keep. No.
Simple verses, and it almost makes me cry every time I hear it. I could listen to every song on Blood Money right now, and I would have a great time. I wouldn't get tired. I wouldn't skip anything. I'd have a blast. I love this music so much, and that's it. If you don't like God's Away on Business, you should probably just go jump into a roaring fireplace, because you're the worst person in the world. The whole fucking album, it's nothing but hits, man. 2002's Blood Money by Tom Waits, officially been inducted in the trap.
Well, next we're going to go even further into the future, which is still in the past.
Oh, yeah, right. We can't... Kai, tell me what aliens are going to be to in the year 2027.
We're not going that far. Let's go back to closer to like 2019. I want to just say a few words about the 2019 release. It's a fifth studio album by Tyler, the Creator, called Igor. Ooh, he's coming.
Don't know.
It's Igor, because that's how he says it in the album. It's interesting because it is not really a rap album. He does some rapping, just kind of a bizarre storytelling. At its heart, Igor is a weird ass love breakup album. Fucked up crunchy beats, weird synth shit. There's some bangers. The only single is called Earthquake.
You should make my earthquake. Oh, make my earthquake.
As you make my earthquake, then it gets into some weird, almost fantasy storytelling, new magic wand. Boy is a gun.
You so motherfucking dangerous. You so motherfucking dangerous. You got me by my neck. That's why these other niggas lame to us. Cause all these other niggas lame as fuck. We show them no respect.
Which are metaphors for various love related things. things, but also there's the character that's being, it's like Tyler made a character that is going through this shit, and that was how he worked out whatever emotions he had to work out. It ended up being a what I think is a fantastic and bizarre fucking album.
And it's also, it's in the canon, Kai. Did you know that? Did you know that? It's in the Trapple Essentials canon. Aliens are gonna do to this.
Igor, it's in the canon. What else you got?
A little musical ditty from, my God, we're going back in time to the year 1996 to singer-songwriter Paula Cole's second album, This Fire.
Where is my John Lee?
Fire, not to be confused, the Franz Ferdinand song.
This fire is out of control.
No, this is an album. It went double platinum, baby. Dedicated to the inner fire of all life. Now, Paula Cole made this album. She produced it herself, wrote it herself. She recorded the whole thing in 2 weeks, which is awesome. You did a good job right there. Now, she was one of the Lilith Fair stalwarts. Had a good time doing all of that good stuff. She won Best New Artist at the Grammys for This Fire, which is a pretty cool thing. I just think it's pretty good music overall. Where Have All the Cowboys Gone, I think, was the first single. And it was a pretty big hit. It got a lot of airplay. It was on MTV. I remember seeing her on Saturday Night Live. This was one of the first times when this was out. This is one of the first times I remember seeing a woman. She didn't shave her armpits. I said, wow, she doesn't shave her armpits. That's weird. She can do what she wants. I know how bizarre that sounds, but when you're 13 years old, that's the first time you see a woman who unapologetically doesn't shave her armpits.
It was kind of shocking.
But it helps to change your worldview. Weird as it may sound, watching Paula Cole perform on Saturday Night Live when I was 13 years old changed my worldview. She's doing that for herself. And people can be whatever the fuck they want to be. But what I like about Where Have All the Cowboys Gone, she's kind of mourning the loss of a fairy tale. If you listen to the rest of the album, either ignores the fairy tale or just rejects it. Where's my happy ending? The rest of the album is like, oh no, that doesn't fucking matter. When you get to Throwing Stones, pure fucking rage.
You were hoped for, a sad prayed for, me that I believed was wrong. But now my anger is my best friend. Be careful, I may bite your head off.
And it's a wonderful thing. Or I don't want to wait.
I don't want to wait.
Now look, I Don't Want to Wait has been kind of tainted by Dawson's Creek, but that's not the song's fault. I do not hold that against the song. I don't hold that against Paula Cole. Now, that was a zeitgeist thing. She struck while the iron was hot. Good for her. She made money off of that.
She also got paid.
She wrote the song because she had a feeling one day that, because she was very close with her grandparents, she had a feeling one day, oh, that's right. One day my grandpa's going to be dead. I love him. I love my grandpa. And one day he's going to be dead. That's what the song's about, basically. I don't want to wait for my life to be over. I don't want to wait for your life to be over. But she throws a lot in there about romantic love. So that's one of the things I like about the song, is that the kernel of it was her saying, I don't want to wake
up
to say I love you to my grandfather. But there's a lot of romance in there. There's a good verse in there. She says, he showed up all wet on the rainy front step, wearing shrapnel in his skin.
And the war he saw.
And that's just the thing people had to go through and still have to go through. That one verse, it has so much poignancy in it. That's fucking phenomenal. How do you do that? My touchstone for this album has always been Hush, 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 because it's very tender and very sad and very solemn. The story behind it, Paula Cole lost a friend to AIDS when he was very young. She always struggled with trying to put that sadness into words. How do you write a song about such a sad state of affairs? And she wanted to make something that, like I said, was tender, disarming and beautiful, and it wasn't just about the sadness.
Hush, 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 says your daddy's touch. Sleep, 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 says the hundredth sheep. Peace, 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 may you go in peace.
I think Hush, Hush, Hush as a song captures that beautifully. Because Peter Gabriel guest stars on the track and he sings a verse. When he comes along and you hear him sing with such grace in his voice.
Oh, maybe next time we'll be Henry VIII. Wake up tomorrow and it's under the grave. Open your eyes in a new life again. Oh, maybe next time you'll be given a chance.
Hush, hush, hush.
It's a song that profoundly affects me. It's an album that profoundly affects me. This Fire from Paula Cole, I think it's beautiful. And I think it might be in the canon. I think it might be there.
Apparently it's in the canon.
You're welcome, Paula Cole. This fire is out of control. We're going to burn this city. That's the wrong fire. Never mind. What's next? What's next? Yeah, go ahead. Jesus Christ. One of these days we're going to get it together.
One day.
I got my fingers crossed and hoping and praying one day we'll get our shit okay. together.
So the next album I want to shove into the canon and blast off for the aliens to jump to. You like that? You like that?
Yeah.
A New York-based artist, Earth Eater. The album is called Trinity.
Don't make me wait.
It is described as ethereal, devotional, industrial, folk, experimental, pop.
Whole bunch of buzzwords.
Whatever the fuck that means. You recommended this to me a while back.
I never even bothered trying to categorize it. I was like, I just like it.
I don't know. She makes all kinds of weird shit. And a lot of her projects involve weird photo shoots of her doing all sorts of strange and bizarre things in weird costumes and weird poses. So that definitely helps. This is fucking weird. I enjoy it. What was your favorite song from this album? My favorite track, I think, is Super Soaker. There's a lot of sexuality also in her art. One of her newer things. She's walking out of like a scummy looking lake holding like a fish. And she's wearing these, it used to be like Daisy Dukes, but they're literally ripped to nothing. They're like 8 shreds. And I mean, you can't really see anything. So it's still covering up the important parts, if you will. There's just kind of weird sexuality. You're not looking at her like, man, she's ready to fuck. It's like, she's ready to kill you. She's holding this fish. She's got like a bikini top on. She's got this crazed fucking look in her eye.
The cover art to her new album is very sexually charged.
Did you listen to that? Yeah.
I have.
Good. It's pretty fucking good.
But we're not going to talk about Powders.
I was actually thinking about surprising you and just changing this to that album, but I listened to it and I was like, well, it's pretty good, but I don't think I like it as much as Trinity because of the weird techno sexual experimental shit going on in Trinity. There's just something fucking weird and sexy about it, and also kind of intimidating and creepy.
I don't know how to describe it. I never thought to categorize it. I don't know. It's weird fucking music. You could definitely see, yeah, it'd be a weird club. It'd be a weird fucking club. But there's a club that exists out there where you could play fucking Pearl Diver. That crowd would just fucking groove to it.
I need a
That's the only kind of club I think I'd ever be comfortable in.
Or Fontanelle. And in those situations, usually the DJ speeds it up a little bit or adds some extra fucking or something in the background, gets you fucking pumped. Everybody's fairly fucked up, exhausted, sweaty.
I imagine it devolving into something more akin to the circle of hell that is reserved for Lust, where it's just a tornado of skeletons constantly fucking but can't experience pleasure. Right. I imagine it's like that. Wailing and gnashing of teeth, a complete lack of fulfillment, but they never stop trying because they can't. I don't know. I like it a lot. You kind of got it with Super Soaker. Like, you're asking me, I would probably would have picked Super Soaker if you had said it first, but I feel like a fucking asshole.
I mean, it also kind of depends on the day or your mood.
I like the mood of Lick My Tears. I like what it evokes in me. It just does something weird to my brain.
Trinity by Earth Eater.
What was it in Super Soaker? She says, "Meet me in the deep side of the pool, but the grown girls been a snorkel.
Took a hook and then I realized." Oh. Damn. Okay.
That's good. I think she says, "Gush, don't lie." Gush, lies, don't lie.
She does. She says gush in it somewhere, right?
She says gush, don't lie.
Gush, don't lie. Gush,
don't lie. Yeah, so yeah, I have to pick Super Soaker. You already said it, but you said it for a reason.
I'm sorry.
It's so sexually provocative, but it never feels exploitative. She's just speaking her truth, Kai.
Now it's your turn to speak some truth.
It's in the canon. Oh, it said that, right?
Fucking locked and loaded, baby.
Earth Eater is in the canon. I gotta go next, I guess.
Fucking dazzle me.
I'm going out on a limb with an album from 1999 created by a man named Michael David Cummings, who you might know better as Spider One, from a band called Power Man 5000, and it's called Tonight the Stars Revolt.
Tonight, the stars break fall.
I fucking pulled the trigger on Tonight the Stars Revolt.
Nice.
What I did was I took Tonight the Stars Revolt, Spider One, and I put it head to head against 1998's Hellbilly Deluxe from Rob Zombie. I said, well, both of these albums are doing something specific. Power Man 5000 is going deep into pulp sci-fi, and fucking Rob Zombie decided what I'm gonna do is go hip deep into pulp horror. In my heart, I'm thinking, I can't choose between the two. Why can't I have both? But who wins in this case? Who makes the more cohesive album? Which one is the most successful in trying to get its point across? And much to my shock and surprise, Power Man 5000 was much more successful conveying a sense of paranoid pulp science fiction than Rob Zombie was in conveying a sense of pulp horror. That was very surprised. I figured Rob Zombie would run away with it because I have fond memories of both albums. Yeah, there's a lot of, I don't even know what you call it with Hellbilly Deluxe. It's very unimaginative at times, the music he's making. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but his little brother fucking outclassed him by far with Tonight the Stars Revolt. I listened to both of them. I thought, I like both of them. I'm pretty sure I'm going to end up talking about Hellbilly Deluxe. And then when it was over, there's no fucking contest. I mean, Tonight the Stars Revolt starts out with this really cool sci-fi narration.
Spinning complacently in the darkness, covered and blinded by a blanket of little lives, false security has lulled the madness of this world into a slumber. Wake up. An eye is upon you, staring straight down and keenly through.
Malachi Throne, he's the narrator. I guess most people would probably know him from the series It Takes a Thief, starring Robert Wagner. I remember him as False Face from Batman, the Adam West show. That's where I remember him from.
Boys, we are about to double-dizzy Batman and Robin until the dexterous duo is duped, decoyed, and diabolically destroyed.
The only thing I remember him from, played False Face, two episodes. But he does this really cool narration that sets the stage. I mean, just the names of the tracks, like Nobody's Real, Tonight the Stars Revolt, obviously, Blast Off to Nowhere, They Know Who You Are, The Sun of X-51. Such a great sense of imagination on display, and Spider-One's vocals are just gravelly, and they convey a sense of dread. He's really selling this shit, and I really love it. Now this is what it's like when worlds collide! It doesn't tell a specific story. It's not a concept album, but it has a theme. It doesn't sound like there's a lot of happy endings involved with the characters in these songs. I'm a big fan. I was surprised how much I still enjoyed the music. And in some cases, I actually kind of enjoyed it more than I did back in the day. I think Nobody's Real is great. But I like the lyrics. Nobody's real, but they're willing to let you know. I just like that. It sounds so conciliatory. You know, and Blast Off to Nowhere has Rob Zombie doing backup vocals. His vocals are the worst part of the song. That's it. Great. That's all you got? The album has a cover of Let the Good Times Roll from the Cars, and it doesn't suck. Let the Good Times
Roll! Wow.
How does it not suck? And it ends with that wonderful coda, Watch the Skies for Me, where Spider shows off his versatility as a vocalist. It's very soft, very soothing, and it's a perfect way to end it. Because, I mean, Watch the Skies is this phrase that became famous from the original Howard Hawks production, The Thing from Another World.
I bring you a warning. Every one of you listening to my voice, tell the world, watch the skies.
Yeah, but he repurposes the lyric, Watch the Skies for Me, because it's a romantic song. So you know what? Fuck it.
Watch the sky for me. Watch the night. I've been there for you.
That we originally talked at some point, like we might do a head-to-head Hillbilly Deluxe versus Tonight the Stars of Volt. Well, guess what? That's not happening because I already fucking did it. Hillbilly Deluxe didn't make the cut.
Didn't make the fucking cut.
I was surprised at how much I disliked maybe a third of the tracks on Hillbilly Deluxe this time around. And yeah, all that stuff is still light years better than whatever the fuck he's doing now.
Right. Spider Zombie?
Seems like an okay guy. He made that movie, Allegoria, I saw on Shudder last year. Not very good. Yeah, so I guess Rob Zombie hasn't beaten the filmmaking department, so he's got that going for him. Oh, by the way, Tonight the Stars Revolt, it went platinum in America, just so you know.
Oh.
And it is their, to date, most successful release. It's not shocking, because have you ever heard of anything they've done since?
No.
As far as I'm concerned, they're a one-hit wonder. I think most people would also consider them a one-hit wonder, because that's exactly what they are. I'm sorry, Spider One. This is all I need. It's in the canon. Spider-1 is in the canon. Rob Zombie is not in the canon. If we're depending on music to get him in the canon, he's fucked. I'm not even a big fan of White Zombie, so I don't know if that's going to happen. But if that doesn't turn out, he's going to have to hope that we start talking about his movies. I guess House of a Thousand Corpses is probably in the canon. Devil's Rejects is probably in the canon. Yeah. But we haven't talked about it. Music-wise, he's fucked, basically. Make better music.
You get your chance, big fella.
Aliens gonna off to Power Man 5000. They want to.
This is my kind of stuff.
This is what if, like, the worlds collide.
Well, let's keep it with some kind of sci-fi, mystical-themed shit. We're gonna go way back. 1980. Also, an album you told me to listen to a long time ago. An album called The Age of Plastic by The Buggles. Most popular, obviously, Video Killed the Radio Star. Big hit that came out September 1979. Based on that song, again, a one-hit wonder, sort of, but they had also kind of made this album as it was a concept album. A cynical comment about the weird shit that was happening with technology and things were changing. Turned into the 80s, shit was about to get weird, and this definitely helped fucking kick it off. I just like that it's so fucking funny and weird and doesn't take itself too seriously. A lot of it is focused around sci-fi shit, living in the plastic age. I love you, Miss Robot.
I mean, the whole album is exploring themes of artificiality, how we become a more superficial culture, and the worries that we would become a much more superficial culture. And a lot of those worries turned out to be very founded, very prescient.
One of the other things that struck me after listening to this originally, I mean, it's like 35, 36 minutes long. So it's not a huge album. It sounded very clean, well recorded. And then I was like, oh shit, it was recorded in 79. But also it was very quintessentially 80s. It helped establish the rest of the sound. Having listened to all of the shit in retrospect, obviously, because we weren't born when the shit came out. No. I thought it was just one of the things from the 80s. I grew a lot of respect for that when I was like, wait, this came out before all of the things that sound like the 80s. One of the OG 80s sounds that it created the fucking 80s sound.
When I first listened to The Age of Plastic and I got into the Buggles, that's what got me a little further back. And that got me into Kraftwerk. And Kraftwerk was the foundation for the foundation. You want to talk about the birth of the 80s sound. You want to talk about new wave. You want to talk about synth pop. Right. Kraftwerk basically set the stage for that and got everybody else involved and said, hey, this is a new sound. You guys want to follow up on this? And the Buggles were like, holy shit.
The bassist, I think he wrote most of the songs. Trevor Horn.
Yeah,
he was very inspired by
The Man Machine.
The Man Machine. Which had just come out, having also listened to all of that stuff decades later. I could imagine when that shit came out in the 70s, people go, what the fuck is this? People are listening to fucking Bob Dylan and singer-songwriter shit where it's like a voice and a guitar. That's what was popular at this time. And then you hear fucking Kraftwerk, 45-minute, just bizarre journey. And you're like, what the fuck is this? All these weird synths and things that no one else had ever heard of.
I mean, there wouldn't be a Berlin trilogy if not for Kraftwerk.
Yeah.
Exactly. Bowie would not have gone down that path. If he hadn't been blown away by Kraftwerk.
The fuck is going on over there? I gotta check that shit out right now. And he did.
And there would be an Age of Plastic.
This was one of those things that, you know, I had written off as a one-hit wonder until you're like, no, actually, you should check it out. And then I was like, oh, surprisingly well done for like an 80s album. Like, it doesn't sound, a lot of 80s albums kind of sound like kitschy. This sounded very professional and clean recorded. Still sounded good, 43 years later.
Yeah, it's been that long, man.
If you haven't ever listened to Age of Plastic, fucking Buggles, just check it out.
Everyone should fucking check it out. Listen to Astro Boy. You should
listen to it again. Yeah, you should definitely listen to Astro Boy.
And say you don't care, Astro Boy.
Clean, Johnny on the Monorail. The whole fucking album.
Johnny on the Monorail is definitely the Kraftwerk homage. The
whole fucking album is worthwhile. Absolutely. People always pissed on the Buggles because they thought they were a novelty act, basically. They absolutely are not.
I don't know how many albums they made. I don't think they made a lot, did they?
No, they were not a prolific band. Adventures in Modern Recording was... Yeah, I thought they had another one after that. But no, it was Adventures in Modern Recording. That was it. So yeah, two albums. And Adventures in Modern Recording is fine. I don't know if I'd recommend people listening to Adventures in Modern Recording.
I didn't listen to that one.
It's not bad. There's nothing remarkable about it. I think Age of Plastic is special. And it's in the canon, motherfucker. Did it again. We blasted a hole in the fucking planet Earth.
With the fucking Buggles. And I mean, let's be real. Aliens have been trying to that for decades.
It's true. Buggles, Age of Plastics in the canon. It's already in the canon. You knew this. Up next is something. I'm going to say words in order now, maybe. I don't know. With one of my faves from the year 2004, which is near and dear to me, from an artist I consider basically unassailable. It's Bjork, and the album is Medulla.
The pleasure is over.
Previous release was Vespertine, which a lot of people consider to be her high water mark. Everyone loves Vespertine. it's a masterpiece. She wanted to get away from that because it was very electronic. I guess she thought she wanted to do something pure. She had an initial concept of an album composed purely of the human voice. To be fair, that is not what Medulla is in the end. There is some post-production work, sparse instrumentation. You'll hear pianos, stuff like that. But the vast majority of the sounds you will hear in Medulla is the human voice. Not just her voice, but the voices of other people. You've got tube and throat singers in there. You got Rozelle, a legendary beatboxer. Fucking Mike Patton.
Of course.
She wanted somebody that sounded demonic. Who am I going to get? Oh, the guy from Faith No More who can scream like the devil. That's, of course, who else is going to be? But she had these wonderful ideas in her head of modern paganism. Something primitive, something primal. I wanted the record to be like muscle, blood, flesh. You could be in a cave somewhere, and one person would start singing. And then the next person would sing a melody, and you could just kind of be really happy in the cave. That's what she's trying to convey with Medulla. It's a pun, by the way. Medulla is a pun. Medulla is a word that means marrow in Latin. She added the accent on the U because doula in Icelandic is an informal term for cute. It's actually a pun for cute. There was never a tour for Medulla. She liked the idea of a tour, but she's like, that's too much work. The album is about trying to tap into primal human spirit, basically. That's what she's trying to do. I think that's an admirable goal. Volcaro is my favorite. It just sounds like a medieval hymn.
Langt í burt, vakir veröld stór. Grimmum töfrum trillt.
It's all sung in Icelandic, so I don't know what the fuck she's really saying. I have no idea. I want to maintain the mystery, so I'm not going to look it up. And if somebody leaves a comment on the fucking blog and tries to tell me what it actually is about, I'm going to delete that comment.
Just so you know.
But What Is It is great. The Pleasure Is Mine is great. The whole goddamn album is great. When we get to Desired Constellation, around the climax of that song, she starts wailing.
Have I come to make it right? Have I come to make it right?
Cry because it fucking breaks my heart. I kind of thought this is one of those albums I could probably talk about for an hour, but I'm just like, no, it's a masterpiece. I love it. It's one of my favorite things. Medulla from Bjork. If you want to know more about it, fucking find anyone on the internet to tell you about it. I could have picked any Bjork album, put it here, really, because I love all of her shit. But this is the one that I think is the most personally effective. This one means the most to me. That's it. Let's move on. Whatever's next. It's in the canon. Aliens love it. She's one of them.
I was going to say, let's be real. The aliens had this before we even heard it.
Going to some weird raid in a cave in space. I like what she does. I've always liked what she does. I think she's a fucking genius, honestly. She is.
Indeed.
She's a musical genius. Maybe she's fucking crazy, but she's a genius. The madness is a part of it.
Like Lonnie Holly in that aspect. Like, I don't know. Some of it's just fucking bonkers, but I love it, and it doesn't really matter. Up next, are you ready?
Yes.
Well, I've been waiting on you. Up next, we've got a little album, 2007 album. After the metal summer we had, put this bitch in the canon. 2007's The Death Album by fake band Death Clock.
There are no fingerprints deep underwater. Nothing to tie one to a crime. And if you seek vengeance, all you need are instruments of pain. You need your knives. Check. Boom. Check. Dagger. Check. Chains. Check. Rocks. Check. Laser beams. Check. Acid. Check. Body bag. Check.
Well, they tour, so they're a real band.
The tour, that's true. The music was all made basically by Brendan Small. The original Death album, funny, melt your face off. Some of these songs are mentioned in the first season. Some of them are in this season. Thunder Horse was, or a version of Thunder Horse was on, was that Rock Band?
Was it Guitar Hero 2?
Was it the first Rock Band?
I think it was Guitar Hero 2.
It was Guitar Hero 2, yeah.
Okay.
Earlier, shorter version of Thunder Horse is on Guitar Hero 2. The some of them are just like serious metal songs. Some of them are funny, goofy, silly shit, over the top, fucking blood recruited. It's just about how you're gonna die by blood.
Wait, no, what did they say about the human body and proportions of things? Blood is an energy conductor. I am one of them. All I need is an outlet.
Oh, it's like but, birthday, death day.
Birthday, death day is pretty fun.
Wanted a purely instrumental version of Go Into the Water because I think that's the strongest song in terms of the actual music. That's the most badass track on the whole album. The finale of the first season, and the way they used the music to sell the epicness of the concert that the band was putting on sold it so beautifully. It was such a great finale.
It's a cool ass funny metal album, melodic death metal, allegedly. People are gonna tell me I'm fucking stupid for saying that. I don't care about that. It's metal, it's funny,
it's a parody, but it's pitch perfect.
Yeah, that's the whole part, is it's a parody, but it's actually better than a lot of the things that it's parodying.
There's no malice in it. It's clearly done with affection. Brendan Small is taking this shit seriously when he's making the music. I still love that. How come nobody writes songs about just taking it easy?
And just, you know, it would be great if you guys could just keep your comments to yourself. Just keep quiet while we play it and then not interject.
What's what he interjects about?
Man, just can it. You know, so I can play something that'll blow your mind, all right? Just something I'm really...
What's it called?
It's called Taking It Easy.
Like waiting to pass your feet?
Yeah.
Instead of taking...
I said just can the interaction till after. Ready? Here goes.
Who engineered this?
I just told you no interrupting. It just kills the momentum. Wait, what's...
Oh, right. Sorry.
Toki engineered it. Why?
Nothing. No, it sounds good so far. You okay? Just play.
The Death Album from Death Clock, a Metalocalypse production. Weirdly enough, from the creator of Home Movies. You wouldn't have thought the guy who made Home Movies would graduate to fucking Metalocalypse. And that don't make no sense. It's like Dr. Katz had a gentle child.
Right.
Then Metalocalypse comes along and you're like, what the fuck? He's a versatile creator. And I love him for it. I love Galacticon too. Galacticon is awesome.
Galacticon's pretty good too.
It's space, man. It's spacey. It's
space metal kind of, yeah.
Spacey.
Death Album is in the fucking canon, and it's gonna rock the aliens' world.
Well, it's in the canon, and up next, I got a little ditty from. Oh yeah, I did another album from this year a little while back. Wink, wink. It's from the year 2000.
We did that too, I'm sure.
Yeah, we did. We did that. Of course, we did. We could not let that pass. But another album from the year 2000. A band I hold in pretty high esteem. It's a band called Radiohead, and the album is Kid A. I'm not dead. I'm alive. Jeffrey Dahmer was one of the monsters the Grimms had to fight. This is the dumbest show in the world. What the fuck did I just see? Anyway, Kid A is... I'm going to cut that out. Nobody needs to know. Kid A is the fourth studio album by Radiohead. Did you know they're an English rock band, Kai? Did you know that?
England, you say.
You know, OK Computer was a hit. Everyone loved it. The band spent a lot of time promoting Kid A. They toured forever. Everyone loved it, so everyone wanted to keep hearing it. And Tom York had basically reached a point after he came off the road from OK Computer. He didn't want to do anything like OK Computer again. He said, I was a complete fucking mess. I was completely unhinged. He was coming apart. A lot of stuff started coming down around him, and he didn't like it. He didn't like a lot of new bands were just popping up out of the woodwork. That he felt they were really aping Radiohead sound. They weren't trying anything new or original. He didn't like the media, the music media in particular. He felt they were just vultures. Before this point, music for him was an outlet. It was a way for him to deal with the stress and the bullshit of his life and to get it out of his system. But now he couldn't do that because the music had become a point of stress. He just felt boxed in. And also he was suffering from writer's block. And that was another thing that he never had before.
Right. I think that that happened with a lot of artists who blew up kind of at the end of the 90s. They got so popular and the media was so crazy at the time that they just got burnt out and self-destructed or fizzled out or had to deal with it one way or another. And people were following you everywhere. And it didn't matter whether it was music or movies or whatever it was. But I think that happened to a lot of people, a lot of those celebrities and especially musicians a year before could go to the grocery store and now can't go to the grocery store in your own fucking city where you live without getting mobbed by people. You couldn't do it anymore. And I imagine someone who was like someone such as yourself who doesn't like to go be in big crowds and hang out around a bunch of people and all of a sudden you can't fucking go anywhere. That shit is gonna fuck you up.
Tom York is a very introverted person. He was having a bad year, we'll say. Maybe a bad couple years.
Right.
OK Computer was a huge hit, and that got them a lot of attention. A lot of attention that turns out maybe he didn't really want. Disillusioned with the mythology of rock and roll music and the mythology of the rock star. He felt that the genre had run its course, and he started really getting into electronic music. This is when he hit upon an idea. Part of it, you have to imagine, was to try to circumvent his writer's block. That also doesn't mean that it didn't come from a place of pure creativity. He wanted to try to stop emphasizing his vocals and just use his voice as an instrument in a song. Right. Maybe this could work. I'm not going to think so much about trying to create coherent lyrics as much as I'm trying to create sounds or textures that I will just layer into this tapestry. Problem is, neither Tom York nor any other member of Radiohead knew how to do that. You have to understand, Radiohead was an analog band, and Tom York's found this new avenue of creativity in a purely digital world. He dragged his band kicking and screaming into that, and none of them knew how to work these new arcane instruments they were forced to work with, synthesizers and sequencers and all this bizarre software. They didn't get it. And so they ended up just kind of fucking around to see if there was anything they could do with it. Eventually, they reached a point where they knew, oh, we can't do this as a band. We can't hang out in one room, in one studio, and try to make sounds together. And so they would all just kind of go off and do their own thing and then come together with these collections of bizarre noises that they've compiled. Can we do something with this? And that's an interesting way to make an album. But they did reach a point when the band collectively decided, if we can't make anything worthwhile out of what we're doing now in these sessions, then we're going to call it quits and we're just going to disband. It became pretty serious after a while because Tom York was at a point when he was like, no, this is what we're doing. I don't know if it's going to work. This is what we're going to do because I can't do anything else right now. The rest of the band's like, we've been doing good work. We know we like what we're doing. Can't we just keep doing that? Oh, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. For Tom York, it was already broken. It couldn't be fixed. So they had to take this big leap of faith. It all fell into place with the creation of the opening track, Everything in Its Right Place.
And that is the song that instantly drags you into the album.
And that's the first track they finished. And there's this great quote from Ed O'Brien, to be genuinely sort of delighted that you've been working for 6 months on this record and something great has come out of it and you haven't contributed to it is a really liberating feeling. Because nothing Ed O'Brien did as an electronic musician made it onto that track. And he finally heard this finished mixed version of Everything in Its Right Place. And it was great. None of my shit's on there. Oh, wait, I don't care.
Wait, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Because this album is perfect.
And that's exactly how it started for the whole band. They all got into it and were like, wait, this is working. So they just followed him. They didn't know how to do any of this shit, but they figured it out as they went along. And they made something transcendent with Kid A. The idea that this exists is a miracle. Tom York didn't create full lyrics for this album. And none of it makes any sense if you really think about it. Like in Morning Bell, he says, where'd you park the car and cut the kids in half, shit like that. Just weird phrases that just repeat.
It's kind of like Red Hot Chili Peppers lyrics where it's just the words that fit the song. It's the words that need to go there. That's what it is. I think there's going to be something about cutting the kids in half. I don't fucking know.
Cut the kids. Cut the kids there.
fits this section, yeah, it'll be fine.
It sounds great when he says it, and that's all that matters. Because guess what? You're not supposed to be paying attention to the fucking lyrics. It's a fucking instrument.
Or like the Bjork album. It is the music. Same thing. It's not about the words. It's about the sounds that the words make.
Tom York had at the time, he was with Rachel Owen. They were together 23 years, I think. They broke up in 2015. They had two kids. She died of cancer a year later. When they reissued OK Computer in this new edition called OK Not OK, they dedicated that to her memory. When Tom York was up to his eyeballs making Kid A, he reached a real low point, really questioning whether he'd made a huge mistake in dragging his band into what may have been an extended slow motion nervous breakdown of sorts. And during this point, Rachel Owen would keep telling him, just try the best you can, and the best you can is good enough. Just keep doing it. Don't expect anything more out of yourself. He internalized this phrase so completely that he ended up folding it into the chorus of the track, Optimistic. It's a wonderful refrain that just keeps repeating in the track. It's a wonderful phrase in and of itself. When you can find the context for it, I think that makes it more powerful if you understand where that phrase came from. I mean, obviously, Kid A is a masterpiece.
I think my personal favorite is Idiotech. I say it's coming, I say it's coming. Let me both sides, let me both sides, let me both. I say it's coming, I say it's coming.
On Idiotech is tremendous. But to wrap this up, Kid A hit number one on the Billboard charts in America, went platinum in the UK and the US, Radiohead's first number one album in the US. Now, of course, OK Computer went double platinum, ended up selling, I think, almost 8 million copies worldwide in the end. But there were no singles. You heard nothing on MTV. Very limited press. And in fact, one of my favorite stories is the band wouldn't even allow record executives to listen to the album on their own. They got the executives on a bus and said, while you're on this bus driving to Malibu, you can listen to the album on the bus. And that's it.
Get off the fucking bus.
Then get off the fucking bus. There was almost no press for this album. And the album still sold extraordinarily well, which is a wonderful thing. It helped to justify, someone would say, incredibly bizarre choices that Tom York was making as an artist during this period of time. Like, look, it paid off. This fucking album hit number one, which is astounding. You can sum it up with a quote from David Byrne. Now, of course, Radiohead was named after a song from the Talking Heads that was featured in the David Byrne directed motion picture True Stories from the soundtrack of the same name. Wonderful movie, wonderful soundtrack.
I was surprised and very flattered when Radio stated that they had named themselves after a song that I'd written. I had to ask myself, why that song? It really, I still haven't been able to figure it out, and in a certain way, I don't want to know.
So it felt appropriate that David Byrne would be the one to induct Radiohead into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And obviously, and David Byrne was one of the formative influences for Radiohead. In fact, Tom York's approach to the lyrics of Kid A was inspired by David Byrne's approach to the lyrics in Remain in Light. But anyway, during the induction speech, there's a quote from David Byrne where he says,
"For me, the record that really kind of was my conversion moment was Kid A, the record that came after that. Don't applaud to me. I didn't do it. It's not my fault. I'd never heard anything like it. I thought it was great. What was really weird and very encouraging was that it was popular. It was a hit, which to me proved that the artistic risk paid off. And it proved that music fans sometimes are not stupid."
And that's it. Sometimes music fans aren't stupid. They got it right. And that's why it's in the fucking canon.
What's next, motherfucker?
What's your last pick?
Well, my final pick, I'm going to cheat a little bit. And I'm going to pick more than one thing.
I didn't know we could do that.
I didn't either, but I couldn't pick one thing. So I'm going to pick three things that are loosely related. I'm talking about a trilogy of albums by Nine Inch Nails. Two of them are EPs. One of them became a full-length album. They are Not the Actual Events, Ad Violence, and Bad Witch, 2016 to 2018.
God, break down the door. God, break down. Find the end.
is here. Not the ones you came looking for.
One of the reasons I wanted to include these, the beginning of the inclusion of Atticus Ross to become the other member of Nine Inch Nails with Trent Reznor, that was happening in some of these albums. Also because the first two, if you were signed up to the Nine Inch Nails website and fan club, you got an email with a pre-sale link. And if you clicked on that, you could buy the album for $12 or $13 or whatever it was. When it released, you would get an instant digital copy. Later, the physical media would arrive, not the actual events. And then add violence. One day I got a package from Null Corporation. I was like, what the fuck is that? Physical media for not the actual events. Fucking shipping labels all over it. And it said Null Corp on it. And I was like, Null Corp is a Trent Reznor company. So you open up this package and there's this giant black envelope, one sticker on it. And I'm going to read it right now.
To be read in its entirety.
In all caps.
Before opening, actions have consequences.
So that part is in red. The rest of it's in black.
NTAE.
Null Corporation something something.
May contain subversive elements that produce feelings of euphoria and may be harmful and unsettling to the consumer. Likewise, this physical package may lead to unrealized expectations or unexpected results upon opening. Cautions should be exercised with both.
And at that point, I'm like, what the fuck is this? And then again, in all caps and in red.
And this is important. This will make a mess. By opening this envelope in any way, you assume all risks and waive any claim against the Null Corporation, any of its subsidiaries or affiliated entities from any and all damages or harm you may incur.
So that's sealing the envelope that I got from Trent Reznor. I was like, what the fuck? You open it up. And inside, like cardstock, that has a bunch of bizarre images that are affiliated with, not the actual events, which has a lot of weird type, like typewriter type overlaying itself into these weird shapes and all kinds of shit. But the important thing is, I took it to heart when it said, and this will make a mess. So I went outside when I opened it. It's actually Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross's faces with a picture of them with their faces scratched out, like it was taken with a camera on film, and then they scratched out their faces on the film. They put a handful of dried makeup powder in with it. So that way each one was a unique piece of artwork. So when you open it, there's fucking black powder everywhere and it doesn't come off very easily. And I thought this was the funniest and coolest thing I'd ever gotten the fucking mail, potentially in my life. That's pretty fucking cool. And the album, look, the album's good. I'm in on this. The album is kind of just like, it's interesting. The second, Ad Violence, also like 20 minutes long. I got basically the exact same email. The last one was so fucking cool. I'm definitely clicking on that shit. I have that one right here too. The cover of Ad Violence is this kind of crusty looking old switchboard with a bunch of plugs and wires. They lead to like a dial that is labeled Anxiety. There's a switch that says Add Violence. The EP is, you know, it's good. It's a Nine Inch Nails EP. The album artwork, that's one of the reasons I really enjoyed this. Because again, it's just a weird unmarked envelope. Comes from the Null Corp. This one was a little smaller. Quick reference guide and a dial. You open it up and it has like a model and serial number. Null Corporation.
User assume all liability for the operation of this device under guidelines set forth in Statute 329817. Any breach is subject to penalty and prosecution.
They open it up. And it says spare replacement labels. And it's a pad of black stickers with white lettering that says Add Violence. I was like, well, that's pretty fucking cool. They were like printed labels, hard plastic. One says deviance, one says self-awareness, one says anxiety. And they're the labels that are on the machines in the picture. The lyrics of the EP with these kind of weird polymorphic figures that are Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. But then there's like random pages and it's like patch updates and it's talking about firmware to fix known issues to this fucking imaginary Ad Violence machine. And then there's like pages of component descriptions.
Degrees of freedom console. Determines dimensions perceived by SASs. Absolute hard limit. Conditional. Possible to transcend.
And I mean, there's just pages of weird shit like this. So it's in a trifold thing that folds out into a T. And then one of the T's folds into like a 3-foot poster that is the panel that I keep referencing. And it's got all these numbers that actually correspond to the random shit. Those random things I just read, it had a bunch of numbers. And those correspond to these fake imaginary dials. this fucking physical component of these EPs blew me away. And then the third part, originally supposed to be a kind of a trilogy, but I think Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross just started making shit. Bad Witch just turned into a full album. Also wonderful. I think musically, Bad Witch is my favorite of the three. Bad Witch is like maybe 10 minutes longer than the other two. Bad Witch is just kind of very angry and aggressive. First song's called Shit Mirror. I like it, and I wanted to find a way to bring these three things together, put them in the canon. All the Nine Inch Nails is probably going to be in the canon. We're going to talk about some of it here and there. Those may be fighting words if I say all of it. But I like these three things, and I thought, why not just fucking load them up, call it a day?
If that's what you want, sure. I don't care. It's fine.
I mean, you want to put the Berlin Trilogy in all at once?
No, because I want to do three episodes on the Berlin Trilogy. Because we're going to
talk about 4.5 hour long episodes.
No, I'm gonna do, in season three, a three-part Berlin Trilogy retrospective. It's going to happen.
All right, well, bust your fucking last...
You didn't even mention She's Gone Away. You didn't mention that shit.
Fuck.
The best fucking song of that entire trilogy. You didn't mention it.
I can't remember what she came here for.
I didn't even say anything about the Lovers on Ad Violence.
No,
and that's
you didn't.
A great fucking song too.
Into the arms of the lovers, free, take me into the arms of the lovers. Can I ever hope to forget? Always rearranging misses those words.
You spent 20 minutes talking about physical letters that have a bunch of scary shit written on them, and he didn't talk about the music. You fucked up. But I'm surprised you didn't mention the music, because it's fucking great. You just kind of said, hey, it's good music, but let me tell you about makeup powder that almost ruined my life when I opened an envelope. You're like, well, I mean, look, it's a fine story, but I mean...
I know, it's because I hadn't listened to him lately.
And yes, it's in the canon, the final pick on our two-part volume three is whatever the fuck, essential albums, whatever. This is a season premiere. I got one pick left, and I didn't cheat and pick three fucking things. Not like some people who I won't name. I picked one. I made a choice. I made a hard choice. First off, I'll start off by saying I was strongly tempted to literally just pick 11 David Bowie albums. It would have been easy to make that list, but I thought, hey, that's not right. I'm supposed to use this time to get in, you know, all this other stuff. I wanted variety. And I think I got variety. I didn't, it's the widest fucking list you've ever seen. You're right, it is. I'm sorry. I failed at diversity. It's like half women, so hey, that's something.
At least we have a lot of ladies in there.
All these choices were things that I didn't want to dig deep for these picks. That's the whole point. This is stuff that's just right there. Like, what is it? Who's the artist you want something in there? Oh, it's Tom Waits. Well, what's the Tom Waits album? That's the choice. I want to get something from Bjorkin. I want to get something from Policore. So I'm sorry. But of course, the last pick. At this point, it's become a running theme. 3 years in a row, that last pick is a David Bowie album. It has to be.
It's gotta be.
It is 1976's Station to Station.
Turn on the thin white tube, throwing darts in lovers' eyes. Here are we, one magical moment, such as the stuff from where dreams are woven.
David Bowie's 10th album, called a marked departure from 1975's Young Americans. David Bowie was just hitting home runs. People were complaining.
Aladdin Sane kind of sounds a little like a Ziggy Stardust, but it's great. Oh, Diamond Dogs kind of sounds a little bit like Aladdin Sane, a little bit, but it's also kind of weird. I don't know about this 1984 stuff, but it's great.
They all sold. Young Americans comes out. At this point, David Bowie is deep into his plastic soul phase, thrown glam rock into the trash and set it on fire, and public has embraced it. They love it. He goes on this elaborate Young Americans tour. He's selling out arenas all over the world. People are falling in love. So what does he do next? Well, here's the problem. David Bowie, at this point in his life, basically living on cocaine. It was a weird time for old David Bowie. He was drowning in paranoia, worried that witches were trying to steal his semen, which, hey, you know, maybe they did. I don't know. We don't know.
We don't know what happened to him. It's David Bowie.
One of the things that still baffles me, he was living in fear of Jimmy Page. He had conversations with Jimmy Page about mysticism. Jimmy Page had at some point turned him on the work of Aleister Crowley. And then within maybe a year, David Bowie became convinced that Jimmy Page was trying to kill him. Now, was Jimmy Page trying to kill him directly, or was he trying to send bad vibes at him? Was he trying to hex him? Did he have agents sent? I don't know. No one knows. David Bowie doesn't know. The director shoots a documentary called Cracked Actor. This thing never gets a real release, but it shows David Bowie falling apart, still trying to exist as a human being when he weighs like 90 pounds. He's a fucking skeleton.
Uh-huh.
And Nicholas Roeg sees the cut of this documentary because he's an insider. And he says, this motherfucker's going to be the star of my new movie. Calls David Bowie up, tells him he wants him to star in The Man Who Fell to Earth, an adaptation of the Walter Tevis novel. David Bowie does not remember starring in The Man Who Fell to Earth because he was high on cocaine. He also doesn't remember making the album Station to Station because he was high on cocaine
the entire time.
In his own words, he says, the only reason I know the album was recorded in Los Angeles is because I read it once. He didn't know. He starred in a movie, had no idea what the fuck was going on. After that, jumped right into this album when he probably shouldn't have. He was in a real bad way. Visited Iggy Pop, his friend, in rehab. The two of them eventually would fuck off from America together to get clean. David Bowie produced his album The Idiot, kept him clean. David Bowie stayed clean, made the Berlin Trilogy, but all that's in the future. And oddly enough, through this bad time, he made what many people would consider one of his best albums. The Thin White Duke was the final David Bowie character, the final persona he would inhabit in Station to Station. And the Thin White Duke is a bad person. He's a sociopath, but he sings such beautiful songs of love and devotion. And it's all very seductive. When you realize the man singing these songs has no life behind his eyes, it can become very unsettling. And that's the character David Bowie is inhabiting in this album. But if you don't think about that, and you just listen to a lot of this music, it's beautiful. Wild is the Wind, the cover of the song that he'd heard Nina Simone perform it, blown away by her performance, and that inspired him to make his own cover.
Oh, will your kiss my life? Know your life itself.
While he was recording his cover, Frank Sinatra listened to him in the studio. Sinatra, old Blue Eyes himself, told him what he's just done was something special. And so obviously Bowie, he had to keep it the album because of that. Then you have Word on a Wing, which is another absolutely beautiful track.
Just because I believe.
Religious devotion, but it's also about trying to find love in a world that has no soul. But then, of course, you have something like TDC-15, which is a song about a woman who crawls into a futuristic television and doesn't come back.
I want my baby home, yeah. She sat around for a long. She sold my TV's to one fire. Her baby's gone, yeah. She go right in my mind. She go right in my. So I don't cry and blow my TV's here.
That that's a misconception some people have. They say that the TV eats the woman. That's not true. She makes that choice. She climbs into that TV. She does it herself. The guy is like, he's got this awesome TV, but he also has his girlfriend. She's so in love with the TV, she's like, I'm going to crawl in there. And he laments the fact that his girlfriend's gone. Hey, maybe the TV will bring her back. And no such luck. So he's like, maybe I'll crawl in after. You don't know. The song leaves it open-ended. But no, she makes that choice. The TV doesn't eat her. So that's, I want to clear that up right now.
She gets eaten by a TV. It's like a horror movie.
No. She does it herself, okay? Don't get it twisted. But it starts off, title track, Station to Station, which, I mean, it's a 10-minute epic. Basically, two songs in one, and it's one of the best things that anyone's ever fucking recorded in the history of anything. But the best lyric in the entire track is what he says. It's not the side effects of the cocaine. I'm thinking that it must be long. He knows he's deep in his addiction, and he can't help but wink at the audience about this. He knows he's fucked up and this shit could kill him, but he can't help but poke fun at himself. Thank you for that, David Bowie. But you know, he claims more about the stations of the cross and not about actual trains, even though this motherfucker puts a train sound at the beginning of his fucking album. So don't you fuck with me, David Bowie.
Sounds like a train.
Earl Slick, there's the train noise on the guitar. He's a magician on the guitar, so it's up to him. And like Golden Years, obviously, is on here. It's a great song. Everyone loved Golden Years. That was the first. Bowie claims he wrote it for Elvis Presley, and then Elvis said no. I don't know if that's true or not. It's entirely possible. But it's a great album. It's one of my favorite Bowie albums, but I can say that about just about every Bowie album. But I love it. There's the wonderful thing about Station to Station is that it's a weird album. It foreshadows, I should say, what David Bowie would do next. Station to Station serves as the bridge between Young Americans and the Berlin Trilogy. It's not one specific thing. It's all over the fucking map. And that's because David Bowie was high on cocaine and trying to figure himself out. A lot of people didn't like it. They thought it was kind of incoherent. The cool thing about Station to Station is that it was a huge fucking hit. It was actually David Bowie's highest charting album in the U.S. until the next day. In 2013, which astounds me. But yeah, it's in the fucking canon. David Bowie is back. It's in the canon. Aliens have been to there since 1976. David Bowie's up in there with the aliens to whatever.
He's listening to something else. He's listening to some shit from the future.
From the future, the past, alternate dimensions. He's getting blasts from a thousand-eyed alien.
I was gonna say some amorphous blob.
Yeah, right. That's exactly what's happening. Whatever. It's in the canon. That's the end of the episode. Season 3, we fucked up. Congratulations, I guess. Look, it's a brave new world, dear listener. We did it. Trapo is back. I was gonna say we're back. We're better than ever, but
we're the same.
Clearly, let's that's be not honest. True. Yeah. Let's be real. We're still here. Yeah, it's better than nothing. Bimmy, you're welcome.
Thanks for listening, Bimmy.
Look, Bimmy, if you want to leave a comment, because you're the only one who does anymore, you and Babe Ruth's ghost, maybe, on this post, so we don't feel completely fucking alone. Please do tell us what we did right. Tell us what we did wrong with this episode. What did we pick that is just hot garbage? What would you have picked? What do you think should be in the canon?
Tell us one of your essential albums. Tell us 22 of your essential albums. You know what else? You could send us an email at traposhow@gmail.com with a list of your 22 essential albums.
We would also appreciate you leaving a comment at traposhow.blogspot.com. TRPPO show, either way, at gmail.blogspot. It's the same thing. It's hard. It's not like it's in the show notes. You can just click that. It'll take you where you need to go. Leave a comment, send us an email, vote in the poll, which we don't have because there's no poll.
There might be one by the time you read this.
In the future, or listen to this. Probably gonna do some new music showcases soon, so there will be polls attached to those. Here's what we're gonna do now. They call it the call to action, by the way. So we just did the call to action. Go to the blog, leave a comment, send us an email. Somebody sent us an email, and it was an exciting thing. Somebody sent us an email. They took the effort. They're a cool person. Apparently, we gave them some suggestions for music they should be listening to, which is fucking awesome. They someone did it. They took it to heart. Oh, by the way, how come we didn't do any heart? Is heart not belong in the canon?
Not right now.
Shit. I didn't pick heart. Why didn't I pick heart? I didn't put Baby of the Strange in the fucking canon. When I heard you play, I knew your name should be changed. We're all
call you Baby Lestrange, who looks so insane.
yet.
Oh, God, we gotta fucking scrap this episode and start over.
Oh, motherfucker.
For everyone who's still listening, which is, I imagine, no one, you should probably get the fuck off the internet, because that's exactly what we're gonna do. Fucking future band-aids, man. That's not a reason I want to go back. Like, can you jab me with two needles through one future band-aid?
Can you double dip in one future band-aid? I gotta know.
Is that gonna cause like a real bad infection or something? Yeah. I don't know. You want to find out? It's Walmart. We don't fucking care. It's like, all right. Fucking
so, you know,